Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. We're highlighting remarks made by Alex Schadenberg during the 2023 Speak Out Illinois Pro-Life Coalition Conference. Mr. Schadenberg is an author and executive director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, based in Canada. In that role, he sheds light not only on euthanasia, but also on the status of other pro-suicide actions. Mr. Schadenberg's comments are very timely because of the introduction of the End of Life Options Act in the Illinois General Assembly. This pro-suicide legislation allows doctors to prescribe death-inducing drugs to adults who have been diagnosed with a terminal illness. But opponents warn that if it becomes law, it could easily be expanded to cover non-terminal conditions and even children. In this segment of Spotlight, Mr. Schadenberg dispels the death with dignity narrative pushed by proponents of suicide, and he outlines how pro-death forces are expanding the definition of what terminal means.
These cases create a real problem because they're saying that assisted suicide is a form of health care. Now let me ask you a question. Do you understand what I'm going to when I'm saying if you call it health care, you've got a serious problem? And the reason is right off the bat. They're going to lie to you. They're going to tell you in Illinois that we're going to have all these safeguards. If it is considered a form of medical treatment, as they say it is, then how can you limit it? They can say, oh, well, it would only be an 18-year-old who has this medical condition, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, think about it. How can you deny a 17-year-old assisted suicide if it's medical treatment? You can't. How can you deny it to someone who's not terminally ill, if they're suffering, supposedly, if it's medical treatment, right? If you're going to call it medical treatment, now there's a whole other question involved with it, and it's called anything that denies you equality to treatment would be considered discrimination, right? So they know this from the beginning. They know they're writing bills that will expand quickly. I want you to know that the Dobbs decision was based actually on the decision called Glucksberg. Many of you who are involved in pro-life realize that. So in 1997, the Supreme Court in the U.S. made its Glucksberg decision. It was a unanimous decision of the Supreme Court. And the Glucksberg decision dealt with assisted suicide. And they said that there's no right to assisted suicide in America because that's what the assisted suicide lobby was trying to achieve at that time, that there's a right to assisted suicide in America. And the Glucksberg decision stated that, you know, liberty interests not deeply rooted in the nation's history do not qualify as being protected as a liberty interest. That's what Glucksberg said. And they said that there was no proof in any way that assisted suicide is something of a liberty interest because it doesn't go back in our history in any way that way. So Glucksberg was a great decision. And remember, Dobbs was based on Glucksberg. So Dobbs said the same thing about abortion, that Roe was an incorrect decision based on it claiming something that wasn't true. And it based that on Glucksberg. Now, why is that important? Because recently the Massachusetts Supreme Court was dealing with the Kligler case. And when you looked at the Dobbs decision, you realize that there could not be a right to assisted suicide in Massachusetts or nationally or anywhere. So let's go on about this stuff. The drugs. Some of you don't realize about this, but you know, the assisted suicide lobby has been doing drug experiments for a long time. So how do you die by assisted suicide? Well, they give you three drugs. I'm not going to get into it. There's three different drugs they use. But they used to use a drug that was a sleeping pill from the 50s. And that sleeping pill was basically delisted a long time ago because, you know, you had a problem if you accidentally took too many pills, you died. Not very good. But that's what they were using for assisted suicide. That drug then was taken off the market, but then it was being used for assisted suicide. The company that produced that drug sold the rights to it to another company, and then the price was jacked way up. So the assisted suicide lobby, around 2015, they started getting together and talking about, we need a cheap way to kill. Now, why is this important to you? Well, when they're talking about assisted suicide in your own state, one thing they're going to avoid talking about is how they actually do assisted suicide. Why do they want to avoid it? Because they want to sell the paradigm that this is, you know, death with dignity, it's quick, you know, it's easy, people die a good death, and it's not true. So the Seattle Times reported in March of 2017, the first second alternative turned out to be too harsh, burning patients' mouths and throats, causing them to scream in pain. So the first drug alternative to second all they came up with had a problem that, yes, it was killing people, but it was causing a lot of pain. So obviously, that did not follow their view of death with dignity, okay? There was actually 67 people who died that way, so they kept on doing this experiment. And then what they did is they changed the drug combination. They're actually now on the fourth generation of drugs. And the second drug mix led to these long, drawn-out deaths. So they say, oh, well, I guess that doesn't fit either. In fact, the sale time said up to 31 hours, but we know that there was one that was 104 hours. An article published in The Atlantic in January 2019 was interviewing this Robert Wood, who was the medical director for the organization End of Life Washington. Now, why does an assisted suicide group need a medical director? I don't know. They're about killing people, right? Anyway, and what did Robert Wood say to The Atlantic? He said, well, with the drug mixture they were using, he says, well, we knew that it was going to put you to sleep, and we were pretty sure it was going to kill you. Well, that makes me feel good, doesn't it? Wonderful. He says, but, you know, it worked out, but with a tragic consequence, there were cases where the chloral hydrate burned people's throats, causing severe pain just as they expected relief. So they were screaming out of this life, and supposedly this was a death with dignity. The Medical Express reported in September of 2020, a little-known secret not publicized by advocates of aid in dying was that while most deaths were speedy, others were very slow. Some patients lingered for 6 to 9 hours, a few more than 3 days. Well, definitely more than 3 days, some of them. So, you know, assisted suicide is not what they appear to be, that they want it to look like. In fact, it's about a lie. But the fact of it is that they want to sell you something it's not. They want to wave a flag that these are deaths with dignity, these are easy deaths, you're not going to suffer. Guess what? It's not true. It is about killing, though. Many people support assisted suicide based on fear of dying a bad death, and obviously assisted suicide sometimes causes a bad death. So why were they developing these drugs? They needed a cheap way to kill you. That's what they were looking for, the assisted suicide lobby. But on top of it, they were doing human trials. Think about this concept. If you're willing to kill, obviously you're not going to be very worried about your ethics. And think about the concept of doing human trials. You know, when we're doing trials on drugs, you usually do animal trials first. And if it works out on the animals, then you might try it on humans, right? The second thing is, human trials require consent. And I was pointing out that with the situation, people were being approved for assisted suicide, that's true. But they were not being told that they were being part of a human trial. Okay? But of course, ethics don't mean much when you're into killing people. Like, why would you care about a little bit of ethics when you're into killing people? March 14, 2022, the Colorado Sun published an article about Dr. Jennifer Guardiani, who's an assisted suicide doctor in Colorado. And the article was about the fact that she was doing assisted suicide on people with anorexia. What Dr. Guardiani did is she redefined anorexia as a chronic condition, which is a chronic condition. She redefined it as a terminal condition. Now, is it a terminal condition or is it a chronic condition? Well, they want to expand what terminal means in order to expand who can die by assisted suicide. Now, we know in 2021 at least one person died by assisted suicide based on anorexia, because if you look at the Oregon report, it lists why people died. It doesn't tell you how many. So I just know that in the Oregon report, it listed anorexia in 2021. I just don't know how many died by assisted suicide for anorexia in 2021. The key study on anorexia is a study that was published in 2017, and it's called Recovery from Anorexia and Bulimia, 22-Year Follow-Up. So this was a study that was published in 2017, and it looked at people. It had 246 participants participating in the study over 22 years. And this is considered the study. So I was doing Googling. I was Googling to find out what the issue is all about and how to argue it. And so I look at the study, and this is a study that's referred to by all the anorexia and bulimia people who are studying that issue. So what did that study show us? That over 22 years, 62.8% of the participants with anorexia recovered, and 68.2% of the participants with bulimia recovered. Now, sadly, not all of them recovered. Of the 246 participants over 22 years, 18 of those people died. The study did not say that all of them died by either anorexia or bulimia. It didn't say, it just said 18 of the 246 died. That tells me it's a chronic condition, not to say that nobody died by anorexia or bulimia, but what it means is that most of them do not die from anorexia or bulimia over a 22-year period. Clearly, it must be a chronic condition. So let's get into this issue. I think you need to talk about this. We got to talk about what it is. I always say we need to talk about this issue, what it is. This is about killing people. The other side wants you to talk about aid in dying, you know, medical aid in dying, assisted dying, you know, doctor-prescribed death. They want to talk about different things like that. And why do they want you to redefine it? They want you to redefine it because it's easier for people to accept it then. This is about killing people. This is assisting a suicide it's not a good thing in any way, shape, or form. Canada legalized euthanasia in June of 2016. In a very short time, we've gone from euthanasia for the terminally ill to euthanasia for the chronically ill, now to euthanasia for the mentally ill. Very fast in Canada, okay? And I think you should be using the Canadian stories because, you know, in the past when we were fighting assisted suicide in the U.S., we might have used some Dutch stories because, you know, euthanasia had been going on in the Netherlands and there were some bad stories. But, you know, most Americans would say, yeah, but that's the crazy Dutch. I'm half Dutch, so it's okay, I could say that, right? But, you know, Canada, we're just north of you. We're almost like cousins, whether you like it or not. We're better at hockey, though. I don't know. So in a very short time, we've legalized this and we've expanded it. Now our government came up with a report saying that they think we should be legalizing euthanasia for children and for people who put it in their advanced directive. So that means if you become totally incompetent, that if you had put it in your advanced directive, they could still kill you, right? So that means euthanasia without request, right? Even though you put it in your advanced directive, it's really not you requesting it at the time. You might have requested it 10 years earlier. And the Quebec College of Physicians brought up the issue now of euthanasia of newborns. They're saying we should have euthanasia of newborns, but Quebec's always like that. But I mean, that's where we're going very fast.
Alex Shadenberg during the 2023 Speak Out Illinois Pro-Life Coalition Conference. More of his remarks from that event after this.
Hail and well met. My name is Jenna.
I'm Kenna Rose.
And I'm Eliana.
We are three of the five hosts of the Self-Evident Podcast, a platform dedicated to speaking truths that were once self-evident, and our hope is that we do so in love.
We have seen a distinct lack of platforms talking about worldview issues and theology and just a lot of what's going on in the world from a perspective of speaking truth, but doing it in such a way that is loving. And so our hope is to be able to talk about these in such a way that
our peers can access it.
Right, absolutely. As well as interviewing a variety of people such as pastors, actors, theologians, directors, even some of our friends to glean wisdom from their own walks of life.
Yeah, so if you are in the Generation Z category, even if you're above that, or impressively, even if you're below that and you're listening to podcasts, good on you. We encourage you to stop by our platform at selfevidentpodcast.com.
Self-evident, speaking truths that were once self-evident and doing so in love.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. We're airing remarks made by Alex Shadenberg during the 2023 Speak Out Illinois Pro-Life Coalition Conference. Mr. Shadenberg is an author and executive director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition based in Canada. During this segment, Mr. Shadenberg weighs in on how loneliness and isolation contribute to assisted suicide, and he took questions from the audience and the moderator.
And we've had lots of crazy stories. So by changing the law, what did we get? So we changed the law in 2021 that you don't have to be terminally ill. You only have to be chronically ill. So how do they define it? You have to have an irremediable medical condition. I'm sure there must be a few people in this room with an irremediable medical condition. So what have we had? Well, we had a case in London, Ontario, where I'm from. A man with substantial disability. And he was told by the hospital he had two choices. He could pay $1,500 a day to stay in the hospital, or he could have euthanasia. Those were his two choices he was offered. His name was Roger Foley. I'm in communication with Roger Foley regularly. He's actually got a case now he's trying to take to the International Criminal Court against the Canadian government. Alan Nichols died by euthanasia in 2019 for mental illness, but it's before we legalized euthanasia for mental illness. We had recently a 23-year-old who was approved for euthanasia. He was a diabetic. Now, he ended up living because his mother went ballistic. His mother published the name of the doctor who was going to do the death. She went ballistic in the media, and by the fact that she was just so, most people say, I'll do my best to try and stop the death. No, she went all out, and there was no doctor willing to kill her son after that. But you need to tell these stories. There was a 51-year-old woman with multiple chemical sensitivities. There's a lot of people with chemical sensitivities, but she had a pretty severe case, multiple chemical sensitivities. She died by euthanasia. What did she need? A clean place to live. That's what she needed. She died by euthanasia. We had a veteran of PTSD. A veteran contacting Veterans Affairs, wanting care for his PTSD. What happened? They offered him euthanasia. A woman was approved for euthanasia even though she was unable to get medical treatment. She made it very clear, I don't want euthanasia, I want medical treatment. But because she couldn't get medical treatment, she ended up dying by euthanasia. A person with disabilities was approved for euthanasia even though the only reason he was asking for it was because he was homeless. We had quite a few people now who were people with disabilities who were asking for euthanasia. They were approved based on their disabilities. Remember, irremediable medical condition. That includes almost everybody with a disability. Anyway, they were asking for it based on poverty. So here you have euthanasia based on poverty, homelessness, and unable to get medical treatment. You know, a 20-year-old was approved for euthanasia even though he had an undiagnosed medical condition. You can't make this stuff up. You know, you could say you could write a book and people say, oh, well, that's an extreme case. No, you can't make this stuff up. But we need to talk about what it is. These are not deaths with dignity. The other side wants to describe them as peaceful, quick, painless. We need to talk about how these drug systems actually work. I think that would shock some people that this is not a death with dignity at all. We need to care for people. We can't be killing people. These issues, they trample on conscience rights. And I mentioned about the California case. Most of the new laws force doctors to be in some way complicit with the law, okay, forcing them to do a referral. They sell this as my body, my choice. I don't know where you've heard that before, my body, my choice. That's what they sell it as, but it's a lie. It's not about my body, my choice when somebody's saying, I agree your life's not worth living and prescribe to you a lethal drug cocktail, that is. Assisted suicide is not an autonomous act. It's a lie because it requires a physician, and in some states also nurses can do it, but it requires another person to be directly involved with killing you. Many of these people request assisted suicide also have issues related to their capacity, their ability to request, or their true ability to consent, right? But they're often experiencing hopelessness, despair, alienation, cognitive distortions. They feel their life lacks meaning, purpose, or value. They might have a significant medical condition, but they feel their life lacks meaning, purpose, or value. Assisted suicide is more about abandonment, not autonomy. It's about abandoning people at the time of their life. We always made the mistake, we talked about vulnerable people, and we should have been talking about people at a vulnerable time in their life. Because we all will experience vulnerable times of our life. None of us are immune to this. Okay, none of us are immune to this. This affects all of us. We must work with people from all political points of view. There's no silver bullet. People with disabilities have a personal experience. We need to be working with people with disabilities. Absolutely. I'm going to say one other thing. Assisted suicide affects your life. It affects my life. Why? Because you're human. We have to remember what this means. I'm a human being. I'm not like my dog. But there's more to it. When I get home on Sunday night, my dog's going to come to the door wagging her tail. And if I give her a treat, she's going to be all happy. If I take her for a walk, she'll be more happy. She's nice and easy to deal with, isn't she? She's a simple creature. She's made to be a good, simple creature, and she's a beautiful dog. But as a human being, we're different. We are psychological, we're emotional, we're social, we're spiritual, and we're one being. So it's natural when I'm going through a difficult health condition, I might also be affected by that psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. It's normal. And bringing up assisted suicide when I feel or I'm going through feelings of hopelessness and despair, it's not about my free choice now, is it? It's about abandoning me because I'm a human being. And this is what we have to understand. We have to talk about this as what it means to be human. As a human being, this threatens my life. And it threatens your life because we have a lot of suffering in our culture. But people are suffering alone. Suffering alone is tough. There's a lot of loneliness. There's a lot of isolation. There's a lot of depression. People have fear, loss of hope or purpose. These are leading reasons why people are asking for a death.
Sir, when we're talking to our lawmakers about this issue, our fellow voters, what message should we use? Should we give a moral argument, a faith-based argument, or something else?
Depends on who you're talking to. If you're talking to a faith-based person, it doesn't hurt talking from a faith-based point of view. But the problem with our culture is we've become so secular that there's a great division within how people look at things. But I don't think it's impossible for a secular person to be opposed to killing. And I'm saying to you that I do think that sometimes we want to make these issues too complicated. And I think we have to call a spade and say what it is. And we shouldn't be afraid to do that. Now, if you get down to the crux of the issue, let me just tell you quickly. I'm heavily involved in the Knights of Columbus also. In Ontario, I'm the life director for our state of Ontario for the Knights of Columbus. So I go to all those meetings and I was talking. And I was at this state meeting not so long ago with all the district deputies. That means the regional guys, right? And I thought a pretty darn good talk. I was really had my key thing together. And afterwards, this guy comes up to me and says, Alex, I just never thought of it that way before. And what did I do? I basically said, I'm opposed to killing people. I said, you know, you guys, we can't get into all these difficult issues sometimes because some people, they're just so, they're having so many difficulties dealing with the fear of dying like Uncle Joe died. They have some fear of dying a bad death, and they're dealing with that in their minds. And I said, I think we have to get down to the crux of it and be opposed to killing people. But then we have to also be about caring for people. And I tell you, we have to be more concerned than ever before. As this culture becomes this way, we recognize the lonely lady next door. And let's say the lonely lady next door, who may have had three kids, and now her husband's passed away, And she's got three kids living in Timbuktu, never visiting her. And because of her health conditions, she can't really get out anymore. We have to recognize that if she's having significant health problems, and you've got legal-assisted suicide as an example, that her life's threatened by this. Someone's saying to her, well, maybe you should have assisted suicide, might sound pretty good in her ear. But if she's your neighbor, you need to be caring, being there with her and talking to her. And someone in your church, we shouldn't be immune to the concept of the fact that people in your churches are going to die by assisted suicide if you legalize it. It's not because they're terrible people, it's because they're human beings. You know, it's love that changes the world. Because you cared enough for someone, you loved them enough that you actually were being with them, you might be able to save a life.
Another question.
Do you think if they start calling this a medical treatment, there are going to be issues about privacy with young people and their parents' knowledge of what they may be discussing?
Yeah. Well, as soon as you call it medical treatment, there's another problem because, as I already tried to allude to you, you can't just say to someone, oh, now we have this new legal medical treatment. Let's say they legalize assisted suicide in Illinois and they define it as medical treatment. So now you've got a new legal medical treatment in Illinois, but it's only for this person and that person. That's it. You can't say that. So they might write a law that looks tight in order to get it through the legislature, but it won't take them very long to have to amend it. Connecticut has had a bill 10 years in a row, and they failed 10 years in a row. So if you look at the current Connecticut bill, I was just reading it the other day, and I just wrote about it. That's the tightest darn bill there is anywhere I've ever seen in America. It's got definitions for everything. So you would say, oh, well, why are they doing that? Well, they're doing that because they know they failed 10 years in a row in a Democrat state to get this through, so they're going to give you something as tight as possible. Is that their intention? No, their intention is to legalize assisted suicide because they know in a year or two they can just change it. Yes.
I know there have been cases in some states where the death penalty was either postponed or terminated by the fact that they were concerned about how the drugs were affecting the people,
yes,
or the quality of the drugs that were being used to kill them in the death penalty.
Yes.
Is there anything there that we can take advantage of in terms of pointing out about what the nature of these drugs are? I assume the drugs must be very similar, if not the same,
so
that is going on.
You're absolutely right. So they're using the same drugs. But the fact of it is how do you die by assisted suicide? It's a death by drowning. So how do we know it's a death by drowning? Because they don't do autopsies on people who died by assisted suicide because everyone knows how you died when you died by assisted suicide. But on everyone who dies by capital punishment, they all have an autopsy done, every single one. So we know actually how they're dying, and they're dying by drowning. So what these drugs do is they stop the lungs from working. The lungs quickly fill up with fluid, and the person dies of drowning. That's how they die. And so it's important to know that because they're thinking, oh, well, this drug is going to shut down their heart. It's going to be a death with dignity. They're not going to. No. What they do is they put you in coma first. It's true. They give you a drug that puts you into coma. But the drug that's the killer drug is to shut down your lungs. And we wouldn't have known that if it wasn't for the death penalty because they do use the same drugs. Now, why do you have failure with the death penalty? Because they're not using enough drug and they're doing it in the wrong way. I hate to say it to you, but I've been doing this issue for so long. I know how to kill you. I wish I didn't, but I know how to kill you. And they're pretty slick about it in Canada, actually.
I'm interested in whether or not the line being moved to disabled babies, children that are born with different health conditions, and how, you know, are you seeing that, or is it just staying with the adults and the teenagers? Okay.
So in the Netherlands, they have something called the Groningen Protocol. So they're doing euthanasia of newborns in the Netherlands. Now, it's not that common because, of course, most women in the Netherlands will have a prenatal screening test. And so obviously there's very few babies born with disabilities in the Netherlands. Nonetheless, sometimes the screening test wasn't accurate and the woman had the baby and then the baby was born with spina bifida or something and she ends up killing the baby after birth, okay? So Quebec physicians have proposed that we do the same thing in Canada. Now remember, this whole concept of euthanasia and assisted suicide is sold to us as consenting adults. But once you remove consent, who else can't consent? Now, I'm already saying that they're talking about removing consent anyway. They're talking about pre-consent now. They're talking about putting in your power of attorney document so that if you became incompetent, you could still be lethally injected. That's what they're talking about in my country. Well, once you remove consent, who else can't consent? People with dementia can't consent. People with Alzheimer's can't consent. Certain people with disabilities can't consent. So once you remove consent from the issue, it becomes wholesale killing, and that's exactly where they go when they do that, yes.
Let me wrap up with this. Who stands to gain from this?
Well, obviously, the health insurance companies gain from it. In Canada, they've saved umpteen millions of dollars by killing you. It's not Big Pharma, because Big Pharma would make more money if you keep alive, because obviously if you're going to continue to need drugs for a long period of time, that's where they make their money. But it's also philosophical. You have people who are philosophically our enemy. We have to remember philosophically who's the number one philosopher in the world right now. Peter Singer? Now, you and I don't agree with Peter Singer. We're not. I'm a Thomist myself, but you know, you and I don't believe him. Peter Singer believes it's wonderful to be able to kill a baby in the first, 9 months after birth is fine. Peter Singer believes it's okay to kill by euthanasia. Peter Singer thinks it's perfectly good to kill your disabled child. Oh, yeah, he thinks it's all fine and good. So think about it. And someone with dementia, Alzheimer's, absolutely, because they've lost their cognitive certain level, they can be killed. Peter Singer thinks that way. Well, the world follows Peter Singer. We shouldn't be ignorant about that, right?
Sad. What about governments who are hard-pressed financially?
Governments save massive money on it because we have universal health care. But they won't talk about that. They won't talk about that, but it's true.
Do you have a website?
Yeah, Euthanasia Prevention Coalition. It's easy to find. Just Google me. Thank you.
Alex Schadenberg, the executive director of the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition based in Canada. He made his remarks during the 2023 Speak Out Illinois Pro-Life Coalition Conference. Call your state lawmakers. Ask them to vote no on the Pro-Suicide End-of-Life Options Act. For names and phone numbers, click Officials Finder on the IllinoisFamily.org homepage. You can also go there to support the work of the Illinois Family Institute, to sign on for IFI email updates, and to visit our events page. Tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.